गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू अवर भगवद्गीता कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इन द थर्ड चैप्टर एंड वी डिस्कसिंग द फर्स्ट सेक्शन ऑफ द थर्ड चैप्टर। सो लेट्स हैव अ क्विक ओवरव्यू ऑफ द सेक्शंस सो दैट वी विल अंडरस्टैंड व्हाट वी आर डूइंग। यस्टरडे प्राइमरीली वी डिस्कस्ड द रैशनल फॉर अर्जुनास क्वेश्चन। So we will now be discussing the first section of the third chapter. Karma Yoga is better for you as you are not qualified for Gyan Yoga. That is the essential message from the first section. So let us look at this message and then we will go to the details of the various verses. So we discussed till 3.3. Krishna was telling that there are two ways of practicing spiritual life. There are two levels at which one can practice spiritual life. Lokesmin Dvidhanishta, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Now Prabhupada writes over here that religion without philosophy is sentiment or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So both of them are important. And religion enables us to actually do the activities. So chanting Hare Krishna is, we can say, religion. Studying the Bhagavad Gita is philosophy. So of course these are not so discreet. You study studying Bhagavad Gita because it's the words of Krishna. You can also say that is religion because it's a devotional activity. But in general, that which involves a intellectual, systematic understanding, that is the philosophical part. And the religion part is that which involves doing something by which we move forward towards gaining that experience. So when there is only philosophy but there's no philosophy, then it is sentiment. Oh, why do you worship Krishna? Because it feels good. And then what happens? Somebody says that, oh, actually, I feel that so-and-so Baba, when I worship him, that feels very good. So then I start worshipping that person. So then, how do we know what is right and what is wrong? So it can be sentiment. And it will sentimentalism. And then it can go into fanaticism also. Why fanaticism? Because one may start thinking that, oh, I worship this particular. This is my God. This is how I worship. If you don't worship this, you are going to go to hell. So when there is no philosophical understanding, there is just a belief, then it can become fanaticism. On the other hand, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. Because if there is nothing a person is doing, philosophy, maybe it's like this, maybe it's like that, maybe it's like that, then basically there is no transformation that is happening. And when so, maybe, you know, there is so much order in the world, maybe God exists. Somebody sits like that on a armchair on a Sunday afternoon after a heavy meal and starts thinking, maybe God exists. And then pick up the newspaper and say, oh, 25,000 people killed in an earthquake. Hey, there's so much suffering. Where was God at that time? Probably God doesn't exist. Anyway, picks up a bottle of wine. The pleasure in this wine exists. So let me just drink that and enjoy. So this is when people stay at a mental speculation platform. They're not doing anything to realize the higher realities. And that's when it becomes a problem. So, if we want to realize something higher, we need to actually practice spiritual life systematically. And for practicing spiritual life systematically, we need philosophical understanding. So, religion and philosophy, when both are there, then we move forward steadily in our spiritual life. So, I just show a diagram here which illustrates this point of spiritual and religious. So this is an article which I had written, it's published in Back to God. So So, spirituality a higher dimensional science. So spirituality has two limbs. This is philosophy and there is religion. So just as science has two aspects, there is theory and there is experiment. So when there is theory and experiment both, then science becomes a complete body of knowledge. So for example, Newton observed the fruit falling. So maybe thousands of people had observed the fruit falling before. The only thought that came in their mind is, let me pick it up and eat it. They did not think of anything more than that. But Newton, when he observed it, he thought, why is this happening? Why? And then he postulated the principle of gravity over there. So theory means we observe something and try to find out the explanation for it. Now, after I postulate some explanation for something which I have observed, how do I know whether the explanation is correct or not? That is, for that there is experiment. So then, okay, if the fruit falls here, the fruit should fall everywhere in the world. And if there is a force which is there among all metal objects, then even if I throw up a stone, it should come down. And not just anybody throws up a stone, it should come down. And not just a stone, different object, whatever object it may be, it should come down. So they do various experiments by which one confirms the theory or disproves the theory. So similarly, with respect to spirituality, we have philosophy and religion. So in philosophy, what do we observe in philosophy? That, okay, philosophy tells us that I am not the body, I am the soul. So I think that, you know, I don't want to die, yet there is death and I'm just knocked out. So where does my longing for immortality come from? And how can I, is there some way that I can live forever? So where is the longing for immortality coming from? Because there must be a part of me which is actually immortal. So that way we can come to know that I am not the body and the soul. So of course we also come to know from scripture about we are not the body and the soul. But even from logic we can point towards that. Now once we come to know the philosophy, how do I know whether it is right or wrong? Whether I am not the body and the soul? How do I know that? The way is by practice. So then, if I am the soul, and the soul has a life of unending supreme happiness at the level of spiritual reality in loving Krishna, then if I try to live spiritually, if I try to practice devotional service, then I will experience happiness. I'll experience a higher happiness by which my lower drives, my lower desires will go down. So that is what religion does for us. So religion is like the experiment. So the purpose of practicing religion is to experience the higher spiritual realities. So when we chant Hare Krishna, what happens when we chant Hare Krishna? We do japa, we do kirtan, we experience some deeper peace, a richer happiness. And then that happiness frees us from our bad habits. Many of the unwanted habits which we may have wanted to give up earlier, but we're not able to give up. After we start practicing spiritual life, we're able to give it up. So this acts like a confirmation for us. So religion and philosophy, when both are there, then the spirituality becomes a higher dimensional transformational science. Higher dimensional transformational because it is dealing with dimensions higher than what modern science deals with. That's why it's higher dimensional. And how transformational? Because it involves inner transformation. It involves experience of higher reality. The difference, of course, between material science and spiritual science is that material science is experimental, whereas spiritual science is experiential. The experiment is to be done on us. And we have to experience the difference. So in that sense, it's experiential, but it is also a science. Because when we chant Hare Krishna, anybody in any part of the world, that person chants Hare Krishna, that person experiences a higher happiness and becomes gradually freed from the lower drives. So we see that Srila Prabhupada's Krishna, many spread Krishna consciousness, people from America, Africa, Australia, even various parts of the world, Europe, Russia, wherever, all different backgrounds who had never even heard of Krishna any time, when they all became purified, they all became elevated. So this is how there is the universality, just like in science the principles are universal. Of course, we don't know whether in science the principles are universal, but as far as our observation goes, gravity seems to apply everywhere. So, just by repeatability, that is a characteristic of a good scientific theory. Similarly, there is repeatability that is there in spirituality also. Anybody who practices, that person experiences transformation. So, in the bhakti science, our heart is the laboratory. And chanting is the procedure. So, when we practice the procedure of chanting, in the laboratory of our heart, we see the transformation. So, bhakti is a science. And Prabhupada says that when both are not there. Now, looking back from this perspective, if there is only philosophy and there is no religion, then that is like there is only theory and there is no experiment. Then anybody can come up with any theory. Anybody can come up with any theory, and then what is the validity of that science? Not much validity. Because there is not much way of evaluating and confirming which is theory is right and which is wrong. There has to be experiment. Similarly, there is religion. Religion is what brings about the transformation. And so the philosophy will remain speculative and unauthoritative if there is no religion, just as a theory will remain speculative and unauthoritative if there is no experiment. On the other hand, if somebody simply does experiment and not knowing what the theory is, then it will be pointless in many ways. I suppose somebody is doing a theory experiment to find out, okay, this is an acid and alkali. When we mix them together, then we get salt and water. So now I want to find out what is the strength of the alkali over here. So I put in this much acid, this change happens. This much acid, this change happens. This much acid, this change happens. So I don't, if I'm not knowing what is the theory, what is the purpose of the experiment, I just keep doing it, nothing will happen. Or nothing will happen means no understanding will come to me. Because I'm just letting things happen, but I don't have any background understanding. But similarly, when people do religion ritualistically, then there is some benefit, but actually people don't have a deeper conviction about what they are doing, why they are doing. So, when, for example, a child is throwing a ball at a wall, and is throwing a ball and catching the ball, throwing the ball at a wall and catching it when it comes back. If somebody is, say, a mechanical engineer, a person has scientific knowledge about the strength of materials, and then that person throws a ball at a wall. And then if he finds, okay, the ball you throw over here, then it comes back fast. You throw the ball over here, it comes back slow. Then, because that person has knowledge, and observes, okay, that means the wall is thicker, stronger here, it's weaker here. So, basically, the same activity is being done, but because there is background knowledge, so therefore, there is a clearer understanding of what is happening. And one's understanding deepens. So, one has some understanding, and a further observation, the understanding deepens. Similarly, people, there are so many thousands of people, especially in places where the spiritual culture is still there, who go to temples and they glorify God, and they feel something good about it. But if they don't have philosophical understanding, their inclination to continue that may not last, because they may find that, oh, I can go to a movie theater, that also makes me feel good. So then, when other alternatives come up, then they may feel, okay, this is good, let me do this only. So if it's entirely based only on feelings, then it cannot last for very long. Whenever alternatives come up, whenever obstacles come up, one may give it up. But for a devotee, one understands, okay, I feel so good when I chant. Why do I feel so good? It's because I am connected with Krishna, and Krishna is the source of all happiness, experiencing spiritual happiness. And then sometimes I'm not feeling so good. So like I throw the ball on the wall over here, it comes back properly. If I throw it here, it doesn't come back properly. So when I see this difference, I observe, okay, that means the ball must not be sort of good quality. So sometimes I chant, I don't feel good. Why is that? Oh, it must be because the lower modes are affecting me. So the modes keep going up and down like a sine wave. They make my consciousness go up and down like a sine wave. So now I must be in a tamasic mode. That's why I'm not feeling any. But if I just tolerate it, the tamoguna will go away and the taste will come back. So like that, whatever is happening to us, if we have background philosophical understanding, then we learn from it and we grow by it. That's why we need to have a balance of both philosophy and religion. And that's what Srila Prabhupada has given us. We have, for example, the morning program that we have chanting, we have darshan, twice we have darshan. We have the Mangal Arati darshan, and then we have the Shringar Arati darshan, and then we have kirtans. So all this, and of course we have japa, all this is the religion part. And then we have the Bhagavatam class, that is the philosophy part. So like that, all of us individually, even if you are not able to attend the temple morning program, you know, we create our own situation. We have some philosophy and some religion. And when we combine both of them, then we move forward steadily in our spiritual life. So that's how philosophy and religion are integrated together in the standard program given by Srila Prabhupada. And we also have to have a balance in our practice of spiritual life. So roughly, Prabhupada is correlating over here philosophy with jnana and religion with karma yoga or bhakti yoga. That's a rough correlation. And we'll discuss about this much later. Later in our course. Yeah. So let's move to the next verse now. Na karmana mana rambhan naishkarmyam purushosnate nacha sanyasana deva siddhim samadhi gacchati. So na karmana mana rambhan, when one does not do karma, arambha is beginning. So if one does not begin karma, one does not do karma. And Krishna says that just by not doing karma, one does not achieve naishkarma. Ashnute means to attain. One does not attain naishkarma just by avoiding karma. And nacha sannyasana deva. And just by taking sannyas, one does not get siddhi. One doesn't attain perfection. Siddhim samadhi gacchati. One does not attain perfection. So why is that? Here the emphasis of Krishna is that more important than the externals is the internals. So Krishna, now what is the connection between this and the previous verse? In the previous verse Krishna said there are two levels. So now in general understanding, Jnana Yoga is higher than Karma Yoga. But Krishna says what makes Jnana Yoga higher than Karma Yoga, or what makes a Jnani higher than a Karma, Jnana Yogi higher than a Karma Yogi, is not just the adoption of the external forms. Yeah, actually, there has to be an inner purification. And only when there is inner purification, then adoption of the external forms will help. But when there is no inner purification, if one just adopts the external forms, so Krishna is giving these two statements as an indication of the adoption of external forms, that na karmana manarambha nishkarmam purushasate. One thinks, oh, when I do activity, I give up, I'm entangled in life. Entangled in the world. Therefore, I'll give up activity. I have seen renunciates, they give up all activity. So, and then I will not only give up activity, I'll formalize it by taking sannyas. Sannyasana deva. I said, no, just by taking sannyas, siddhim samadhi gacchati, that will not happen. No. See, actually, here 3.4a and 3.4c, both start with no. This doesn't happen. So, adoption of external forms doesn't lead to inner transformation. In and of itself. And so Krishna is telling over here, don't just adopt the external form, that will not lead to any change. So, now in bhakti also we have external forms, you could say. We wear dhoti kurta, we put on tilak. So it is not, Bhaktisthana Thakur also says that. It is not just that by adopting the external form one becomes a devotee. If somebody is having the external form but is having a vicious enjoying mentality, that person is not a devotee, that person is actually Kalir Chela. That person is actually agent of Kali. Bhaktisthana Thakur says that. Both Bhaktisthana Thakur and Bhaktisthana Thakur, they both actually strongly critique ostentatious devotion or hypocritical devotion. Ostentatious means one practices, makes a show of devotion. And hypocritical means one has no intention of devotion, one simply has an intention of exploitation. But adopts a devotional garb so that one can do the exploitation better or more easily. So that Krishna will talk about in the next verse. So here Prabhupada explains that without purification of heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. Sannyas is simply a disturbance. So the verse we have quoted often also, Shruti Smriti Purana Adi, Pancharatri ki vidhim vina, aikanti ki harer bhakti, utpata yaiva kalpate. So without scriptural authorization, if one practices bhakti, then that simply leads to utpata. Utpata means disturbance, disruption. So there is some, and there's a notion among some Mayavadis that if one just takes sannyas, danda grahana matrena naro narayana bhavet. That if one accepts danda, then by the exception of danda, the nara has become narayana now. So no, this doesn't happen. And nara, first of all, nara never becomes narayana. Nara is always the servant of narayana. But even while being a servant of narayana, one doesn't become brahman realized just by adopting sannyas. These are misconceptions. And this Prabhupada says that far better than this is practice of bhakti yoga. So that he will talk about, that Krishna will talk about in the next verses. So now Krishna, after telling this, he is the point that actually it is very difficult to give up activity in principle. Nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishtatya karma krat karyate hi avashah karma sarvat prakati jair gunai. So nahi kaschit kshanam api, that even for a kshana and kaschit, for anyone, jatu tishtatya karma krat, to be situated in a karma is no. Again, so you know, we see 4a and 4c started with na, and 5a is also starting with na. Jatu tishtatya karma krit. So one cannot be situated by doing a karma. And what is the point? Why? Karite hi avashah karma. One is helplessly forced to act. Sarva prakriti jair gunai. Sarva prakriti jair. By born of material, the modes of material nature, everyone is forced to act. One cannot refrain from action. So here Krishna is taking an important point, that action is natural for us. Now, so avashaha, we are helplessly forced to act. Now somebody may argue that actually, yes, because we are under the influence of the modes, that's why we are forced to act. But once we become free from the influence of the modes, then we will no longer have to act. So that is the point that Srila Prabhupada counters in the first sentence of the purport itself. What does he say? It is not a question of embodied life, but is the nature of the soul to be active. What does it mean? Actually, if somebody says that actually, because the body is influenced by the mode, so one wants to act. But actually the body cannot act. It is because of the presence of the soul that the body acts. Yes, material nature is there, its modes are there. But when we are acting, it's not because of the modes alone that we are acting. It is because of the presence of the soul. So the soul's energy may be diverted towards materialistic things because of the influence of the lower modes. But the point is, it is the soul's energy. The modes are simply directing where that energy will go. So energy and action are not produced by the modes. Energy and action are intrinsic to the soul. Their direction is determined by the modes. So the soul, when it is embodied, even then it is active, and when it is liberated, then it will be all the more active. In a sense, for the soul, the body is a burden. For the soul, which is transcendental, spiritual, the body is like a burden. So if somebody is burdened, suppose somebody is, we see a person carrying a big sack, some trekkers, they carry some trekking gear while they are climbing up a mountain. So if they are having a trekking sack, a knapsack, which they are carrying at the shoulders, and they are running fast. So now, if with that sack they are running fast, if the sack were removed, what would happen? Will they become inactive? No, they will become capable of running all the more fast, even faster. So similarly, the soul is burdened by the body right now. So the soul, when the soul is burdened by the body, the soul is moving so enthusiastically, so active the soul is right now, doing so many different things. Most of the things are materialistic, but the point is the soul is active. So if the soul is active in the embodied stage, then when it is free from the burden of the body, how much more the soul will be active? So the source of the energy and the source of activity is not the modes. The modes are the director of the activities. Which way the activities will go? The source of the energy and the activities is the soul itself. And Prabhupada's purports continue the theme that it is better to do devotional activity. And he quotes that while doing devotional activity, even if one falls, still there is no loss. We discussed this with Tektvasa Dharma. Now Krishna contrasts this by after telling this with the point of if somebody does a practice renunciation, then what will happen? Karma indriyani sanyamya yasate manasasmaran indriyarthan vimodhatma mithyacharah sa uchyate. So karma indriyani, karma indri sanyamya. So one put sanyam, one regulates the senses, and yasate manasasmaran, one is remembering within the mind. What is one remembering? Indriyarthan. One is remembering the sense objects. Then what happens in such a situation? Vimudhatma. Such a person is actually a bewildered person. He's a deluded person. Vimudhatma. And what is the Vimudhatma? What is Vimud about the Atma? Actually, is thinking I'm making advancement, but not making advancement. And Mithyachara. So person is fooling oneself and is fooling others also. So Mithyachara is a hypocrite. What is a hypocrisy? Hypocrisy means to seek the prestige and privilege that comes from a position without taking up the responsibility and the sacrifice required for that position. I'll repeat this. What is hypocrisy? It means to accept the prestige and the privilege that comes from a position without discharging the responsibility and the sacrifice that is expected of that position. So somebody becomes the king, say, of the country. Somebody becomes a politician, taking taxes and enjoying. But when citizens come with grievances, no time, get lost. And that is not good. That is unfortunate. So in one sense, that is hypocritical. So if somebody is a renunciate, somebody is sannyasi, and that person takes the respects. Oh, I am a sannyasi. You are a great soul. You renounce the world. People come and offer respect. And people takes their respects, takes the donations, and then is privately engaging in sinful activities, illicit activities. So now if one is taking sannyas, one has to discharge the responsibilities. One has to do the sacrifices accepted for position. So if somebody is sannyasi, one has to take up the responsibility of sharing spiritual knowledge with others. And one has to do the sacrifice of giving up worldly pleasures, especially the pleasure of sex. So every position, it brings some prestige, it brings some privilege with it. But along with that, there is the sacrifice, there it requires responsibility and sacrifice. So the Bhagavatam talks about it, that one should not become a guru unless one is capable of delivering one's disciples. So one capable of delivering the disciples means one should be able to give the guidance, the training, the education by which the disciple will be able to remould one's life and thereby progress towards liberation. If one is not capable of giving that kind of guidance, then one should not become a guru. If one becomes a guru otherwise, then it is hypocrisy, because one is taking the respect that is given to the guru, but not is not doing the responsibilities. So that is what Krishna is saying. Mithya acharaha. So achar is behavior. Mithya is false. So the behavior is false. That means one is pretending to be a sannyasi, but one is not a sannyasi. So karmendriyani sanyamya. So one is doing restraint externally, but yasate manasasmarana. One is remembering internally. Such a person is mithyacharaha. So now we may say that we are also trying to follow the four eight principles, but sometimes we may also get some bad thoughts. So is this also falling? Then do we also become vimudhatma? Do we also become mithyachari? No, it depends on what do we do with the bad thoughts. If those bad thoughts come and we start cherishing them, yes, I want to think more. See, sometimes on say if you go to some website where there's darshan, there's a picture gallery. So then you can see many pictures over there, many pictures of Radha Krishna, of the various deities. So like that, all of us have a picture gallery in our mind. We have a picture gallery of all the sense pleasures that we have done. And if those pleasures are immoral, they're anti-devotional, then sometimes there is a spontaneous high resolution flashback that starts in the mind of that mental gallery. And we start seeing all those images and start thinking, it was so nice, I would have enjoyed that. So when that starts, what do we do at that time? So actually, switch off the gallery. That means start thinking of something else. We don't continue pursuing that. And even worse is that, we deliberately kindle all those memories. What did I do over there? How was that like? So here, Yasate Manasa Smaran refers to consciously cultivating the memories of those sense objects with the hope of enjoying them again in the future. As sadhakas, we may also be struggling to give up sense gratification and the memories may be coming back. But it is one thing for the memories to come back uninvoked on their own, and it's another for us to dig out those memories, for us to ferret out those memories from within, or to try to refresh those memories from without. The two are different things. So if we are doing that second thing, that means, you know, trying to dig out the memories from within or refresh the memories from without by further exposure, then that will be in the direction of mithyachara. So as sadhakas, we want to give up sense gratification, and this is not, and occasional thoughts are not what leads to hypocrisy, but it is conscious and intentional cultivation of those memories and sense objects that can take us towards hypocrisy. So Krishna is saying, such a person who externally adopts the garb. So now that means there are two different stages here. First is, one adopts the external garbs but doesn't try for purification. That will not lead to any perfection. But on the other hand, if one tries for adopts the external garb, but far from trying for purification, one not only doesn't try for purification, one continues one's past mode of thinking, then that will be mithyachar. So that means, best is, there is external change and there is internal change. Second best is, there is external change and there is a sincere attempt towards internal change. Third is, there is external change but there is no internal change at all. And fourth is, there is external change and there is continuation of old ways with the garb of the external change. The difference in third and fourth is, in third one has just adopted the externals, but in fourth one is using the externals as a means for doing the internals secretly. So that is very unfortunate. And Prabhupada writes that even such a person has knowledge, must be called the greatest cheater, even though he sometimes speaks of philosophy. Greatest cheater is a very strong statement by Srila Prabhupada. Even if somebody speaks philosophy and speaks philosophy nicely, still the person is a cheater. Why? Well, he who makes a show of being a yogi while actually searching for the objects of sense gratification, that is a person who is a cheater. Such a pretender's mind is always impure, and therefore his show of yogic meditation has no value whatsoever. That it's just a show, and it will not lead to any spiritual advancement. Now, here we may wonder that, is Krishna in a blanket way condemning renunciation entirely? We see that Srila Prabhupada himself took sannyas, and we have so many sannyasis and brahmacharis in our movement. So, how can we relate this with Bhagavad Gita? What Krishna is telling over here? Actually, Krishna talks about multiple levels. And in this section, Krishna is primarily talking about not Bhakti Yoga. He's talking about Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. So, in Jnana Yoga and in Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga involves an activity, Karma Yoga involves activity. So, Krishna is saying, inactivity and just passive yogic meditation, that will not lead to any purification. So, here we are not talking about Bhakti at all. In Krishna consciousness, whether a person is in the renounced order or the household order, the person is actually practicing bhakti. And that is, Krishna will talk about that later on in the Bhagavad Gita. And for devotees, the principle based on which they take sannyas is Sarva Dharman Pratichamamekam Sharanam Racha. So that is 18.66, the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. So, for us, renunciation is not primary. For us, renunciation is not our sadhana. Bhakti is our sadhana, and the renounced order is the facility for that sadhana. So, we adopt renunciation in the path of bhakti so that we can practice bhakti better. It is not that we adopt renunciation because renunciation in and of itself will lead to purification. No. Renunciation is a tool for us to practice devotional service. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that, I am not a sannyasi. That is that famous verse. Naham viprona chindarpatir anastho yatirva. Naham viprona rapatir नापि वैश्यो न शूद्रो नाहं वर्णेन च गृहपति नमनस्थो यतिर्वा. सो इट्स आई एम नॉट अ ब्राह्मण क्षत्रिय वैश्य शूद्र, आई एम नॉट अ ब्रह्मचारी गृहस्थ वानप्रस्थ सन्यासी, आई एम गोपी भर्तृ पद कमलयोर दास दास अनुदास, आई एम अ सर्वेंट ऑफ कृष्णा. So a devotee, when the devotee adopts renunciation, that is for the sake of practicing bhakti. And bhakti involves activity. Bhakti involves activity. So here Krishna is not talking about bhakti, he's talking about karma yoga and jnana yoga. And jnana yoga involves an activity, and that sort of inactive renunciation is what Krishna frowns upon over here. He recommends active engagement, and that active engagement can be as karma yoga, can be through karma yoga, or the active engagement can be through bhakti yoga also. And we see in ISKCON, even the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they are not just doing inactive meditation, they are doing actually active engagement in devotional service. So now Krishna will talk about how activity is preferable to renunciation. Yastva indriyani manasa niyamyaravate arjuna karmendriyai karma yogam asakta sa vishishyate. So yastva indriyani manasa. Therefore, controlling the senses with the mind, niyamya arabhate, niyamya is control, arabhate means to begin. So, what does one begin? Karmendriyai karma yogam. One engages the karmendriya and practices karma yoga. Asakta, how does one practice karma yoga? With detachment, asaktaha. So, vishishyate means is better, is superior. So, Krishna here recommends engagement as contrasted with renunciation. He said it is far better to engage oneself positively using the senses. The significant word here is karmendriyai. So what are our karmendriyas? Our hands, legs, our speech, all these are karmendriyas. We engage all of them. We don't keep them passive. Karmendriyai karma yoga asakta sa vishishyate. Now even for the yogis or even for those who practice passive meditation, their jnanendriyas don't become active, inactive entire. You know, they will still be seeing, they'll be smelling, of course they cut it down, but the primary action, what causes bondage, is not just what we acquire through the jnanendriyas. Yes, if we perceive sensory stimulating objects, tempting objects, then that itself causes contamination. But what causes primarily karmic bondage is when we engage the karma indriyas. When I see something, that brings some contamination, but when I act on what I see, then I get caught. So I see some delicious food item, or I smell some delicious food item. So, okay, that information is coming in from the senses. But when karmendriya, when I go there, and my legs go there, my hands go there, I want to eat this. And then I stuff myself till I feel as if I have put a boulder inside my stomach. Stomach becomes so full and starts paining. Then there is problem because of that. So problem in this life itself from the health point of view. And thus, if the food is not offered to Krishna, then there is karmic bondage also. So the point is, Krishna is emphasizing karmendriya here, because it is when we act with the karmendriya that primarily the bondage occurs. So he says that it is far better to regulate the senses and with detachment practice karma yoga. So now we may wonder, how can we practice karma yoga if we do not have adequate level of detachment? So some people feel that actually, it is better to go away from the sense objects, because then at least I will not fall prey to Maya. And therefore, I will stay safe. Some people feel that if I am in contact with the world constantly, if I am exposed to sense objects, I will fall more prey to Maya. It's more likely that I will fall prey to Maya. Therefore, let me stay away from the sense objects and I will stay away from, I will not get entangled in Maya. So, now, to some extent, it is true that out of sight is out of mind. That if you don't perceive the sense objects, they will go out of mind. But some things are so deeply rooted in the mind that out of sight doesn't lead out of mind. Actually, when something goes out of sight, it becomes all the more prominent in the mind, and then we return our sight. Where is it? Where can I find it? So, detachment has to be there to some extent. That detachment comes from jnana. Without jnana, we cannot have the practice of devotional service properly. Jnana doesn't refer to jnana yoga. Jnana refers to a philosophical understanding. When we have proper philosophical understanding, by that philosophical understanding, we can steadily practice devotional service. And when we are practicing devotional service thus, we make spiritual advancement by that. Here, Krishna is talking about engaging the senses. So now whether we should be, certainly as devotees, we don't want to expose ourselves to sense objects that are going to take us away from the bhakti. But some regulated engagement keeps us steadily practicing spiritual life. Because if someone, we had a regular principle, no eating, then there will be no practicing of yoga service only. So there is eating. And we can eat also nicely. But it is eating prasad. That's how we become purified. So, Prabhupada writes, don't become a pseudo-translate, transcendentalist for the sake of wanton living and sense enjoyment. Pseudo-transcendentalist is a person who pretends to be a transcendentalist. What is it? A wanton living. You know, all sort of unregulated living is there. And this is a famous quote. This is based on a quote by Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, which Prabhupada is quoting over here. A sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living. So for making a living. That means what? A meditator. People, especially where there is a spiritual culture, or where there is a culture of respecting piety and spirituality, there if somebody wears saffron robe, somebody is in the renounced order, somebody is doing meditation, somebody is doing chanting, then that person gets respect. And not only the person gets respect, the person gets donations also. So then when that happens, the person, some people, there are many people like that who adopt this. They adopt a garb of a renunciate just so they can get all these things. So renunciation should not be adopted because one doesn't want to take up responsibility. Some people think, oh, if I have to go to office and I have to work and then, or I have to take up a job and after that I'll get some money. Instead, let me just renounce. Let me just wear a saffron robe. And then what will happen? People will give me donation. People will give me respect also. So that will be very nice. So it should not be taken as a escape way from the hard work of material life. If that is the purpose, then we are cheating ourselves, we are cheating others. The purpose of renunciation, accepting the renounce order, is to have a greater focus on Krishna. But it is quite unfortunate that there are many people who adopt a renounced order. They actually don't adopt it, they just take the garb externally for the sake of cheap prestige and easy living. And this kind of people have ruined the spiritual culture. Now these people often, they exploit others. And when they exploit others, then that often gets widely publicized. And when that gets widely publicized, then people get a general negative perception of everybody who is in the renounced order. So there has to be a proper understanding from both those who are accepting the renounced order and those who are respecting the renounced order. Those who are accepting the renounced order have to clearly understand that this is a saffron dress is a dress to be actually it should be worshipped. It represents renunciation. It represents devotion to Krishna, and one has to live in a way that honors that dress. And one takes it up as a responsibility. It's a responsibility which we are accepting, so that we can serve Krishna more without distractions. And those who are respecting the renounced order also, they have to also be careful. And it's not that just because somebody wears a saffron robe, that person suddenly becomes respectable. Yes, we may respect if somebody is wearing saffron, but we also have to look at the life. And if the person is not living properly, then we cannot associate with this person. So actually, what to speak of somebody wearing saffron, somebody wearing devotional garb also. Bhushana Chakra Thakur says that if a person is a devotee, in the sense they're chanting, wearing tilak, having kantimala, but if the devotee is not behaving properly, then we can respect the devotee from a distance. We should not associate with the devotee, he says. So same applies with renunciates also. So if there is no proper understanding of what renunciation is and how it is to be practiced and how it is to be understood, recognized by others, then there can lead to this sort of unfortunate perpetuation, multiplication of pseudo-renunciates. This especially happens in dhams. You know, the dhams are the places of devotion and the dhams are the places of deviation. So when we go in the association of devotees to dhams, then we actually advance in our devotion. But dhams can also be places where there is a deviation happening. So people can go there And especially in dhams, there are pilgrims who come with a devotional bent of mind, and they want to give donations. They want to give. They want to do seva in the dham. And as a part of that, they give donations. So many people go to the dhams and start adopting a devotional garb just for getting easy donations from the pilgrims who are coming there. So we have to be cautious from our side. And actually different people come to the renounced order also for different purposes. Because Srila Prabhupada has provided us a systematic philosophical understanding, we understand what is the purpose of renounced order. And also, Prabhupada has also instituted this strong standards for the renounced order. Strict standards. So because of that also, people who are not very serious about spiritual life, they will not come only to the renounced order. They will just, this is too strict, forget it. Actually, waking up early in the morning, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulatory principles, doing the morning program. If those in the renounced order start doing that, if they think this is too much of a price to pray for prestige and some donations, better let me go outside. So generally, Prabhupada has provided us safeguards by which this kind of things can won't happen within the Krishna consciousness movement, that is pseudo renunciates happening. But still there can always be people who somehow creep in through the safeguards, so we have to be careful. But beyond that, outside ISKCON, there are many people who do like this. So as devotees, we have to be careful. And overall, devotees, our focus is not on renouncing, our focus is on connecting. So we connect everything with Krishna. So even devotees who are renounced also, if they have certain talents, they may use those talents in Krishna service. They don't reject those talents in material. So they karma indriyai karma yoga. So Tamala Krishna Maharaj, when he was helping Prabhupada build the Juhu temple and making the arrangements for that, procuring the land and negotiating with Mr. N, who was trying to fleece the devotees. So the land dealings were becoming so complex and it was causing so much anxiety. One day he came to Srila Prabhupada and he said, "Prabhupada, you know, these land dealings are causing me so much anxiety. I am not able to chant Hare Krishna attentively. It's disturbing my chanting." So Prabhupada smiled at Tamala Krishna and said, "Yes, it's disturbing my chanting also." And that was the last thing that Tamala Krishna was expected. The Prabhupada is a pure devotee, a Mahabhagavat. How can anything disturb his chanting? Then Prabhupada said, "Your anxiety for serving Krishna will take you back to Krishna. Your anxiety for serving Krishna will take you back to Krishna." So, you know, as devotees, we make spiritual advancement by developing our relationship with Krishna. And developing our relationship means taking up responsibility. Krishna wants his mission to spread, and we take up responsibility for the spreading of Krishna's mission. So, taking up responsibility means accepting anxiety. So when we accept anxiety, we are, through that acceptance of anxiety, expressing our affection, expressing our devotion to Krishna. And that itself will lead to spiritual advancement. So of course, when we take up anxiety also, we have to take up anxiety that is manageable for us. You know, we cannot take up unmanageable anxiety. So sometimes if anxiety becomes unmanageable, then we will have to tell, "No, this is becoming too much. I'll do this services, but this is, can you hand this over to somebody else?" We can tell that to senior devotees like that. But in general, the principle, we have to know that we shouldn't be running away from anxiety in the name of practicing spirituality. No. By taking up anxiety, for Krishna's sake, we make spiritual advancement. So, now why is Prabhupada comparing a charlatan meditator with a sincere sweeper over here? He's pointing out that the externals don't matter. From the Varanashram point of view, a sweeper may be called as a Shudra. But if that sweeper is doing the devotional activities responsibly, then that speaker will make spiritual advancement. So the externals are useful to the extent that they aid in the internals. But if the internals are there, then whatever the externals, one will keep making spiritual advancement. So now Krishna will give one more reason why Arjuna should do his duty.
Niyatam kuru karmatvam. Karma jayo ya karmana, sharira yatra pichate, na prasidhyeda karmana.
So niyatam, niyatam is prescribed. Kuru karmatvam. So do your prescribed duty. Karma jayo ya karmana. So it is karma jayo is superior, better. Karma is better than akarma.
Sharira yatra pichate,
So yatra, you know, we go for Vrindavan yatra, we go for Mayapur yatra. So sharira yatra. So the soul is on a yatra of the sharir. The soul lives in the body and the soul goes from one place to another. And so our one lifetime is like a pilgrimage in the body. So sharira yatra pichate, the journey through the body means the survival, na prasiddhyed akarmanaha. One will not be able to do that. One will not be able to survive if one does not do one's prescribed duty. So here, Krishna is saying, what is the other reason? For bodily maintenance. So, Krishna has till now given three reasons why akarma is inactivity, renunciation, is not to be done by Arjuna. The first reason was that it is unnatural. It won't lead to purification. It won't lead to advancement. Second reason is it will disrupt social order because people will get misled. It will become hypocritical. So it won't benefit oneself. It won't benefit others. But now when we talk about benefiting oneself, it's about making spiritual advancement. Just by externals, one doesn't lead to spiritual advancement. And it will misrepresent and mislead. And third is, one will not be able to maintain one's body also. So therefore, we have to do a prescribed duty. What do we mean by maintaining one's body? Actually, in the Vedic culture, the varna is for the body, the ashram is for the soul, in a broad sense. So, the varna, with Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that particular, according to one's varna, when one does activities, then one is able to make contributions to society according to one's psychophysical nature and thereby also earn one's living. So, the dharma, the karma, the prescribed duty of a person is the swadharma. There is the material dharma and the spiritual dharma. So the material dharma when one does, then by that one earns one's living. So for a kshatriya, the swadharma is ruling. So by ruling, the kshatriya earns a livelihood. So of course, kshatriya don't take salary, kshatriyas get taxes. But either way, the important point is that the kshatriyas, they have their swadharma, and similarly every varna has its swadharma. So by doing that particular karma according to one swadharma, one earns one's living. So now in today's society, we do not have the varnashram system. So we may have having our different prescribed duties. We may have a job, we may be students, we may be housewives, whatever. So now we all have to do our worldly duties. And by that, we are able to maintain ourselves. So for bodily maintenance, for personal purification, and for the sake of setting a good example, we need to act according to our prescribed duties. So in this way, Krishna tells Arjuna that do not give up your prescribed duties. Do your prescribed duties, and by this, you will make spiritual advancement. Now, Arjuna may still have a question, okay, all that is fine, but my original question was about bondage. You know, I want to give up activity because inactivity, activity will lead to bondage, and inactivity is the way by which I can stay free from bondage. So then the next verse tells, no, that won't happen. You can stay do activity and still stay free from bondage. Yajnyarthat karmano anyatra lokoyam karma bandhana tadartham karma kaunteya mukta sangha samachara. So yajna arthat, for the purpose of yajna, karmana, when one does, so one should do work for the purpose of yajna, anyatra loko, if for any other purpose one does work, lokoyam karma bandhana, one becomes bound by karma. Therefore, tad artham karma kaunteya, what is tad artham? Yajna arthat, means for the sake of yajna, karma kaunteya, Arjuna should do, then mukta sangha samachara, then you will always stay free from bondage. You will not get associated. You will not get bound. So what does this verse refer to? Now this is the first reference in the Bhagavad Gita to the concept of yajna. Yajna will come again repeatedly in this chapter and will be referred to a few times in the later chapter also. Now yajna also has, there is a form and there is a principle. Just like in yoga, there is a form. Most people associate yoga with sitting in yogasanas, particular asana. But that is a form. And that is one particular form. And the principle is, yoga means connection. Connection of the soul with the super soul. Similarly, yajna has a form and yajna is a principle. So generally people just focus on the forms. The form of yajna is that we have a fire sacrifice, and in the fire sacrifice, ahuti is made. And when the ahuti is made in the fire sacrifice, then the yajna is said to be performed. So that is a form. But what is the principle? The principle is sacrifice. Sacrifice. So in yajna, some people may say, hey, what is this? You just take ghee, you take grains, put it into fire, it goes waste. What is this? It's simply a waste of money. Why are you wasting money like this? Wasting resources like this. Actually speaking, there are multiple levels at which you can understand this. When the yajna sacrifices, fire, the sacrificial fires are made properly, according to Vedic descriptions, then the yajna becomes the mouth of Lord Vishnu. And Agni, Devanam Avamo Vishnu, Devanam Paramo Vishnu, Avamo Agni, Tadantara Sarvadevata. So the Rigveda says that among the devatas, Parama, the supreme devata is Vishnu. Paramo is Vishnu, Avamo, lowest is Agni, Tadantara Sarvadevata, in between are the other devatas. So lowest doesn't necessarily mean in terms of power. Agni is not the lowest in terms of power, but lowest in terms of accessibility. So Vishnu is transcendental. Whereas, among the devatas, all the other devatas can be accessed through Agni. So when the fire sacrifices are performed, through the fire sacrifices, Agnidev is manifesting as the fire and he's accepting. But he is the Vahan, he is the means by which the sacrifice goes to all the other devatas also. So in this way, the we'll discuss about Yajna in more detail in the next class. But here the principle is what? That what is being offered to Agni is going through all the devatas. Now, how does this happen? There is a complex, subtle, universal government which does this. It's like when we have a credit card system. Now, I put some 5,000 rupees or 50,000 rupees in a bank over here, and all that I get is a card. Some person who doesn't know about credit card system, he says, hey, you lost 50,000 rupees. So much money, you just got one piece of paper. What did you get? You lost everything. No, one who understands the system properly. This is worth that 50,000 rupees. I've not lost anything. So similarly, actually, from the material point of view, it may appear that I'm putting these grains and they're just getting lost. But actually, they are being accepted as the offering, and that offering is going to the devatas. They're ultimately going to Vishnu. Vishnu is Yajneshwara. He is the lord of the Yajna, Yajnapati. So, ultimately all Yajnas are meant for him. So, there is a subtle system by which this happens. And just the person who is uninformed about modern financial systems may think that putting money and getting a credit card is wastage of money. Similarly, some people may think that just putting things into the fire and we are just losing everything. But actually, we are getting pious credits. We are getting punya. We are also getting our material necessities. We'll see how that happens. But the important point is not lost. It's just a material vision that it is lost. But Krishna is now, in this particular verse, he's talking about the principle. He's not talking about a form of yajna. The principle is a sacrifice. So I could have eaten the ghee, but I offer it to Lord Vishnu through Agni. I could have taken the grains for myself, but I offer it to Lord Vishnu. So what I could have enjoyed, I do it, I give it up for the sake of the Lord. That is sacrifice. So yajna represents sacrifice. So Krishna is telling here, when you do your work as a sacrifice, then you will not be bound. You will be liberated. So therefore, do your work as a sacrifice. Then there is no bondage at all. And that is the principle of Varanashram. So Varanashram, Prabhupada quotes over here from the Vishnu Purana. Varanashram acharvata Purushena Parapuman Vishnuraradhyate. The purpose of Varanashram ultimately is to satisfy Lord Vishnu. And this way, then one is not bound by karma. So now Krishna has addressed over here Arjuna's concern about bondage by saying, no, if you do work for the purpose of yajna, then you will not become bound. So in this way, Krishna concludes the section by saying that you should act. Do not give up activity. Do not renounce, but act. And act in such a way that you will not get bound. So we'll continue the next section in the next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.